Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ahoy there! Ahoy there, listener! Ah, Craig Children here, of the Time Ghost podcast. Usually, of course, I'm joined by Martin Bain-Jones. But it will come as no surprise to regular listeners to hear that his ironwork gates are not yet ready, and he is, as of yet, unable to join us here today for another episode. Usually, of course, we have a good rummage through the sock drawer of culture and see what's been hidden underneath the cycling socks right at the back left-hand corner of the drawer, in cultural terms, obviously. I still have the mental image of a revolver. I don't know where that came from. Perhaps it's a fake. Let's hope it's a fake. What I've been doing while Martin is so detained is to play the odd episode from our archives. So I hope you enjoy it as much as if Martin has been able to turn up for one this week. I give you Time Ghost.
Hello, and welcome to Time Ghost. What did you do there? You went from left to right.
Time Ghost.
Gosh, if I did it the same way, like this.
Time Ghost.
Oh, that's like Rent-A-Ghost, but yes. Yeah. Anyway, Rent-A-Geist.
Rent-A-Geist.
Zeitghost. Well, I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Time... We're pre-recording this one because, well, of course we're pre-recording. It's a ruddy podcast.
It's an ambush, isn't it, Martin?
What we're doing is we're setting a little cultural ambush. We're going to be away. We don't know what's going to be happening in our absence, but we're going to run ahead, hide behind a little cultural bush, and when you come along, we're going to spook you out like a couple of little Times ghosts. Boo, we're saying, culturally. So, Craig, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did we first meet?
What's the matter? Have you gone completely loopy? We've been working together for 16 years. Surely you remember how we met.
For the listeners.
Device.
Yes, a device. Here's the rubric. How did we meet first?
Well, my certain memory is that it was, wasn't it in Wakefield?
Absolutely right, yes.
Absolutely.
In 1992, I think it was. 1992.
The October of 92, I think.
That's right, yes. We went up to Wakefield to see a band called The People Who Walked in Darkness.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes.
And
they used to cover themselves with caster sugar before they came on stage, added to the effect.
That's right, yes, that's yes. Right. Yeah. Ironically, of course, Wakefield suffered a 36-hour power cut that weekend.
Yes.
And we were stuck in Wakefield because none of the trains were running. Do you remember? And there was a riot.
52 people arrested, I seem to believe.
Including Martin Bain-Jones, I'm sorry.
I think I saw you being carted to the meat wagon. Is that what they call it?
That's right, yes. And then I have to say, I thought those lads did a wonderful job. The police in Wakefield, fabulous job that night. Without any electricity, they processed 52 people.
Yeah.
Kept them all in jug. And we were released the following morning after a good slap-up breakfast. Very, very impressive.
Yes, I seem to remember huddling together for warmth with several petunia-oiled young men and women.
That's right, yes. Well, the people that walked in darkness, yes, alas, the great light never shined on them, you know.
Yeah, why do you always say that? Every time you tell this story, you always say that the great light...
The great light hath not shined. Well, it's Isaiah, isn't it? The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. It's Isaiah. Actually, I say that, of course, one of the people that walked in darkness was Dick Breakfast, who then went on to do some session work for Chumbawamba.
Dick Breakfast?
Well, I don't for a moment suppose that was his real name, you know. To Dr. and Mrs. Breakfast, a son, Richard, hereafter to be called Dick.
So, yes, but he, of course, went on. Yeah, he had some success, didn't he?
Dick, yes, yeah. He was in Chumbawamba. Ironically, though, they did get knocked down in the sense that the British public stopped buying their records. So,
that's right. They never did get up again, did they?
Chumbawamba.
No. Doesn't it sound like a sort of group of people just to have a bit too much to drink, really, doesn't it? Basically banging out any old shit.
I think a number of people in that band aren't entirely sure if they were ever in Chumbawamba. If you ever knew you were in Chumbawamba, then you weren't in the band. That's probably what they say, you know.
Yeah.
I think people remember them more for tipping half a bucket of iced water over John Prescott, really, than anything else, don't they? Chumbawamba. And that fellow called Danvert No Bacon.
I know, and if there were ever such a pointless thing to do, throwing a bucket of water over John Prescott effectively leaves John Prescott pretty much looking exactly the same.
Only slightly cleaner.
Only slightly cleaner as he did before. Because he's not the least sweaty man, is he?
That's certainly true. Certainly true. September in Bristol sees the Bristol Poetry Festival.
Oh, I love a poetry festival.
I bet you, yes. I'm not sure I've ever been to a poetry festival.
Well, it's a bit like going to a stand-up gig, except it's not funny at all.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same sort of atmosphere.
Maybe it's a bit like Top Gear, where there are lots of people just standing around.
It is. It's exactly what it's like. I think they've modelled, in many ways, they've modelled that on the model.
On the sort of Bristol Poetry Festival.
Bristol Poetry Festival.
I'm guessing. I mean, who knows who's going to be there? I don't know, but I can't imagine there's a poetry festival that's complete without at least one of the Liverpool poets, obviously. Do you think Roger, Brian or Adrian are there? I wonder.
I love the Liverpool poets.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I think of a Liverpool poet, I think of a man of middling years.
Indubitably.
Perhaps in a sort of, in denim, essentially in denim, perhaps with a sort of flat cap made of denim with badges on it.
That's right. Or a beret, possibly a beret.
Beret. One of them, ironically, might be for the Scouts or something.
That's right.
And then he'll have a little
waistcoat.
A waistcoat jerkin.
Yes.
Also, probably a grandad shirt folded at the sleeve.
That's right. Yes.
Again, with little things. Perhaps one for a sort of traction engines fair or something. Another one.
That's good.
Another one maybe, I don't know, supporting a colliery or something like that.
That's good.
And then shirt out, not tucked in. Very, very skinny legs.
Very thin skinny legs. And then red shoes.
Bright,
a pair of big red shoes.
Bright red leather shoes.
That's right. Yes.
That's a Liverpool poet.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I do like them. I agree with you. I like the Liverpool poets. I think they're very accessible. And also, quite wry. Actually, I would say they are a bit like stand-up comedians, really, aren't they, the Liverpool poets? You know.
Yeah, it's poetry, but it's not funny.
Some of it's funny.
Oh, I see what you mean. Some of it is funny.
Waving at trains, I seem to remember. The lovely Roger McGough one. That had a wry, you know, waving at train. I can't remember how it goes, but the gist of it was you wave at a train because it doesn't matter because when the person flicks his V's up, he's several miles down the track. I thought that was very funny.
Yes, that's good. Yes, as there's often little plays on words, isn't there? Obviously,
you know what's going to happen with the Bristol Poetry Festival, though? I mean, you've got to hope for their sake that it's not going to be a massive success because if it becomes a huge hit, Hegley will be there.
John Hegley will be there.
Then before you know it, Stephen Fry or someone like that will be there, and the Radio 4 crowd will turn up, and they'll be doing.
Just a minute
will be coming from the Bristol Poetry Festival, and possibly even Woman's Hour. Like we're coming to you. It's Martha Carney this time.
Then let's see, Richard Thompson will turn up.
He'll be there, and where Richard Thompson goes, the others surely follow. And before you know it, it'll be like one of the old oil towns or the gold towns in the old Midwest.
ZZ Top headlining.
That's right. Yes.
Supported by Rihanna.
Anyway, the Bristol Poetry Festival, Simon Armitage is going to be speaking there, I believe. That'll be interesting. Anne Stevenson, David Morley, Isabel Dixon, I don't know.
It sounds like the names of people I was at school with.
That's right. Well, I think you were at school with most of them, weren't you? David Morley,
Morley bullied me in the fourth year. I think, in fact, he pushed me into the canal and I got Wheels disease.
Wheels disease?
Wheels disease.
What's that?
Wheels disease? Well, I think...
Did it come up in Wheels?
No. It's Wheel. After the name of the poet, it might actually be pronounced Wiles. Actually,
right.
Wheels. Wheels disease. Have you ever heard of it? I think it comes.
Till
from...
now, no.
I think it comes from rats pooing in water.
Okay. Like Bill Hart's. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very nasty thing to catch.
Is it virulent?
Extremely. Oh. It's very, very nasty, and you know, it can cause renal failure and all sorts. Anyway, I was very, very ill with it.
And I couldn't go to school for six months.
No, six months. I thought you were going to say days, and I was going to say my goodness.
6 months, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 6 months. I
Wheels disease.
Suppurating, close to death's door.
Were you sticky and sweet? Were you sticky and sweet? I mean,
You're segueing, aren't you?
I'm segueing.
Yeah.
Because sweet in that slightly sort of, like, you know, smell infection in a room. It's got that slight fetid sweetness to
it,
hasn't it?
Yes.
And sticky from the pustulating sores, weeping,
yeah,
possibly.
That's right.
Because if you were sticky and sweet, you'd be like Madonna.
Because
Madonna's
tour.
Coming to Wembley with her sticky and sweet tour. I hasten to add, I don't think she's got Wheels disease. I don't think she's got that. I don't think there's anything wrong with her at all. But she, apart from the fact she's called her tour Sticky and Sweet, which to me isn't an entirely beautiful image.
Sticky and sweet.
Sticky and sweet. It's sort of rude in a way.
I think it is.
Sticky
a lot of,
and sweet. It's
probably
rude.
The fact she's after.
Yes.
Which is not altogether untrodden territory for Madonna, is it?
Well, it's not, but one might like to think that it would become the road less travelled as she approaches her 50th year.
Yeah, a nice sit-down, the Madonna tour.
Long live it.
A good book, Madonna.
A good book and a cup of tea.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Now, I would like to bring up some interesting... I'm going to reveal something you wouldn't have known. I'd like to bring up two people who have been very much in the zeitgeist this summer and discuss them and the link between them. Yeah. The first of those is Ralph Vaughan Williams. Now, Ralph Vaughan Williams occupies...
No.
Spelt Ralph, pronounced Ralph. It's always Ralph. It's Ralph.
Why is it Ralph?
That's how it's always been pronounced. Only people from Australia misspell it as Rolf.
Ralph Vaughan
Rafe.
Williams. But how do you know to say it Ralph instead of Ralph?
It's Ralph. It's always been Ralph. 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 It's Ralph if you're illiterate.
Yes,
and a bit
it's one of those things you've got to be in the know again,
yes,
haven't you?
That's right.
You've got to be one of the people who knows, one of the people who's told. Psst, by the way, don't tell it's Ralph Vaughan Williams. Don't tell anyone else.
Like,
don't tell Craig. It's Ralph.
Don't tell Craig. Let's leave him out of our gang.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yes, wait for him to step in it. Then we can all laugh at him and point and jeer.
That's the point, though, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it probably is. But yes, Ralph Vaughan Williams.
Who has three names for some reason, but they're not. It's not double-barreled.
Well,
is
like
it?
Martin Bain Jones. Yeah, no, I think it is double-barreled.
No, it's not double-barreled.
Why, has he not got a hyphen?
I don't think he's got a hyphen. No, he hasn't got a hyphen. Vaughan Williams. No, he always gets Ralph Vaughan Williams. He gets sort of triple billing.
Like Jonathan Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller. Yeah.
But Ralph Vaughan Williams, he occupies that sort of that rural, pastoral, early 20th century place, doesn't he? We put him with Elgar, put him with Stanford, we put him maybe with Parry, who was a colleague and friend of his. But this summer they performed Vaughan Williams' fourth symphony at the Proms, and a lot of people were comparing with Shostakovich. He studied briefly under Ravel, you know, obviously Ravel, who also has been in the Proms recently with the Bolero, obviously we know that, and the Pavan pour un infant defunt. Defunt, I don't know how to say that.
Defunct infant?
Well, a dead princess, yes.
Right, got
it. A dead Spanish princess, I suppose it must be, the Infanta. Anyway, so
which
there we are.
Incidentally, is how the Elephant and Castle got its name.
That's right, yes.
The Infanta de Castile.
That's right, yes. But also, the Elephant and Castle have been used as a heraldic. Of course, we've gone way off. So Ralph Vaughan Williams, there he is. Stick with it, because it's interesting. Ralph Vaughan Williams was a very well-connected man. His great-uncle was Charles Darwin.
Get off.
I'll get back on again. Climb back on. Hold on tight now. Charles Darwin.
Get off again.
Oh, God, I'll get back down. I'll get up again.
Really? Charles Darwin?
Charles Darwin was Ralph Vaughan Williams's great-uncle. Anyway, and the reason I bring that up, of course, is Charles Darwin is going to be in our zeitgeist for the next 18 months or so.
Because that's nice, next year is the 200th year anniversary.
We got there in the end, you see, it was worth it.
It's nice.
Bit trouble, it was a bit like potholing there, wasn't it? We had that little tricky bit, we had to go right underground.
Then under the water, deep breath.
Promise you, it's only 5 feet and you'll be out the other side. Deep breath, and there you are, miles and miles beneath Lancashire or somewhere like that. And then you come out and... And you make it, and you're up, and you're up, and you're fine. It's fine. Anyway, sorry. Yes.
So yes, Sir Charles Darwin.
Charles Darwin, another man of the zeitgeist.
He gets a. I think he gets a very easy ride, actually, Charles Darwin.
Go on.
Well, it's become a little bit of a religion, hasn't it?
Darwin, well, it has. Well, particularly now Dawkins got onto it, hasn't it? You know.
It's extraordinary. It's the greatest heresy of our age. Is to say you don't believe in evolution. I'm not saying I don't believe in evolution. I just think it's interesting that you
couldn't gainsay it.
You could not gainsay it.
But then, interestingly, Dawkins seems to take the view that if you are remotely religious, then you are automatically a sort of fundamentalist creationist and you believe everything in Genesis. You know, Genesis, I think most people, particularly most Christians, would accept is a myth. It's there. It's a myth. You know, I think every tradition has, you know, around the creation of their, you know, the beginning of time is based on some sort of mythology. You know, I don't happen to believe in the Lampton worm, for example, but I'll very happily sing Wisht Lads Had Your Gob and Tell You Ali Apple Story. You don't know what I'm talking about.
No idea.
Okay, there we are. But yes, Dawkins, though, of course, he has a programme on about Darwin at the moment. But practically every second sentence is just him... championing his own beliefs. You know, basically he's using the whole series as some sort of advert for The God Delusion, the book he wrote.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? It's not very funny, no. Probably, but it is interesting that actually science has very little to say, does it not, about about creation, interestingly. Science is essentially an attempt to make a mathematical description. It's it's like looking across the room and saying, I see a kindly looking 40-something man in a flowery shirt.
Where? Oh, me? Yes. I see what you said. Exactly. Sorry, yes. Yeah. I see, that's science.
Yes, that's science, essentially. I'm not saying why you're there.
Yes.
I've got no idea why you're here.
Right.
Believe me. I mean, I'm absolutely flabbergasted that you're here. I mean, I've got no idea whatsoever what you're doing here.
Well,
but
we agreed to... Oh, I see what you say. Scientifically.
Scientifically.
I've
got no idea why you're here.
Well, I just grew.
I can't think of any earthly reason you should be sitting opposite me in this
earthly
studio.
Earthly reason's a very good point.
I can describe the fact that you're sitting there. And if this I was very science. Clever, I could describe it in terms of mathematics. That's what science attempts to do.
Algorithms or something.
Science attempts to describe what it sees in terms of mathematics. Not only that, but the simplest mathematics possible. It says nothing about what the hell you're doing in this studio.
But that's very interesting, and I like the way each time you say earthly reason. No earthly reason. You know, we only have the reason we're born with. You know, I mean, it is a miracle, life. I mean, I hate to say something so god-awfully obvious, but it is. You know, no one can explain it.
It's a miracle. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a creationist miracle.
No,
that's
it doesn't
point.
At all. No, it's just a life force somewhere. You know, so many other defunct planets are as dead as the little Spanish princess of the Ravel piece.
I know what you're saying, Martin, which is you're saying that theistic beliefs are not in any way incommensurate with scientific beliefs. Neither are atheistic beliefs.
That's right.
In fact, you could say that atheism and theism both required leaps of faith.
Well, very, very well put,
Because
yes.
life, don't you think? I often think when you look at life...
Yes.
I don't know how we got to this point, but but anyway, when you look around at life, the world, the universe around you, I always think it can support. It's very generous creation, the universe. It'll reflect back whatever you decide to see in it. Do you see what I mean? So I think, you know, if you decide to believe in God and you decide everything that runs on some kind of intricate mechanism, that's how the universe will reveal itself to you. Right. If you believe that it's a bleak place with a sort of numb chance, blindly trying to find its way down, you know, completely Byzantine corridors, then that's how it will appear to you.
And if you want to believe in chaos, then there's chaos there. There's chaos everywhere to see. If you want to believe in pure mathematical reasons for everything, well, that's fascinating. Yes. And I can't help thinking that. Ergo, God.
Mm.
Or not.
Yeah. Ergo, maybe. Maybe God. Maybe not God.
Maybe not
actually,
God.
Actually, not ergo anything. No, this is the point. It's not ergo. Ergo anything. No. Actually, it's... Possibly. And I choose to believe in God, and I choose not very to believe good. In God. Do you not think?
Very good. Ergo God would be a very good name for a tour, possibly. I wonder if Chris Rock has thought about that, because he's coming to Hammersmith.
Oh,
that's right.
Good Lord.
Ergo God is not the name of his tour, but I'm very much hoping he might consider it maybe for a future
performance.
Thank you very much. That's got right. there in the end. Yes. Yes.
He's made his name from having a bit of a potty mouth, hasn't he, Chris Rock?
Chris Rock, yes.
Yes. Although he's a very, very intelligent man, obviously. Actually, Martin, I'm just going to have to pull the plug on this now because...
Wow, you're in a hurry.
Yeah, I've got to get back. I've got to change the tray in Gugu's dialysis machine.
Trays, how's that work? What, it catches something, does it, the tray?
Well, part of the process of dialysis is, because she's got, it's not just type 2 diabetes that she has, and she has obviously ongoing renal failure, but the vet called it homeostasis, some kind of process by which this sort of gunk is given off her blood, and it collects... It drops down a tube,
yes,
a ceramic tube, because right. it's highly corrosive, right. into a tray at the yes. at the base of the dialysis machine.
What, and if you don't change it, what happens? It spills over and burns into the Earth's crust.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that would go straight through.
Get home immediately.
Yeah, no, I will. So anyway, what I'm saying is I've got to go and do that, so perhaps we should just wrap it up.
Okay, absolutely. Well, yeah. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to talk into your ear. We've been Martin Bain-Jones.
I've been Craig Children.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Time Ghost was written and created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. This episode was originally released by The Times in 2008, and it was produced by John Davenport and edited by Ed Ryland. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.